What has gone before? In our last thrilling episode, Steve Rogers discovered Nazi smugglers working out of his army base. He put a stop to their schemes, in the process receiving the first true test of his new superpowers. Steve also met pint-sized con man Bucky Barnes, the young army mascot who is destined to become his partner. The U.S. Army, on the brink of entering World War II, asked Steve to become Captain America, the living symbol of the American dream. Steve accepted, but found the Army had little use for him outside of a propaganda tool. Steve began to grow bored and restless with his role as patriotic figurehead. Then Steve's mentor, Colonel Fletcher, was kidnapped by the Nazi death squad, acting under orders of the villainous Red Skull. The Skull would not rest until he learned the secret of the super soldier serum which created Cap. At last, here was a chance for Steve to see some real action. Steve vowed to do anything he could to get Fletcher back. When we last saw our hero, Cap began a desperate race to reach Fletcher before it was too late. Will Cap make it in time?
Do you, Chris, take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? Do you promise to barrage her with obscure facts concerning comics, movies, TV shows, and toys?
I do.
And Cindy, do you take this man-child to be your lawfully wedded husband? Do you promise to humor him by engaging him in his obsessive ramblings, for better or worse, in pre-crisis or in post?
Sure, why not?
Then by the power invested in me by the High Father of the Fourth World, I now pronounce you Supermates. You may podcast with the bride.
Hello and welcome to episode 35 of Supermates, the husband and wife geekcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Cindy.
And we're going to talk about Captain America again, The Adventures of Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty, issues number 3 and 4. And you heard the breathless narration before the credits rolled, and it's breathless because I was reading it really fast and I was out of breath. So without a whole lot of ado, we're just going to jump right into this. The Adventures of Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty, number 3, was dated December 1991. It went on sale September 24th, 1991. The large figure of Cap looks very beaten and defeated. His costume's torn and his head's hanging low. The vignettes show action, Cap fighting the killing squad, romance, Steve and Cindy ready to kiss, and drama, Cap standing over a fallen Fletcher. After looking pretty goofy and happy and skipping and dancing on the last cover, strong and brave here to save the American way. You know that. he looks like death warmed over here.
Mm-hmm.
So book 3 of 4, Battleground Paris, and you're going to notice some changes in the credits on this one, unfortunately. Fabian Nicieza, Kevin McGuire, and Kevin West, storytellers. Terry Austin, inks. Richard Starkings, letters. Paul Mounts, colors. Joe Kaufman, logo and book design. Mike Rockowitz, editor. Barry Dutter, assistant editor. Tom DeFalco, editor-in-chief. And special thanks to Mark Gruenwald. And Mark Gruenwald was the regular Captain America writer of the time and wrote the book for like 10 years.
So. When Captain America throws his mighty shield, all those who chose to oppose his shield must yield. If he's led to a fight and a duel is due, then the red and the white and the blue will come through when Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Sour Spritz's toxic spray eats through both sides of the phone booth, and Fletcher is recaptured by the killing squad. Blitzkrieg and Zahn Mortar turn their attentions to witnesses at the nearby diner. Cap arrives at the diner too late, finding nearly everyone there dead and scrawled messages meant just for him. He heads toward the meatpacking plant Hodge told him about, where he hears Cindy screaming. He narrowly saves her from a meat rendering machine. A shaken Cindy relates how she heard the killing squad was taking Fletcher to Paris. Happy to be reunited, the two almost kiss, but duty calls. Cap plans to get to German-occupied Paris and hook up with the French resistance movement, but Cindy insists on going, citing her linguistics in French and her knowledge of the underground.
Cap and Cindy return to Camp Lehigh, and as Steve is taking off his costume, a curious Bucky enters his tent and learns Steve's secret identity in the process. Despite Cindy's protests, Bucky claims he can get them a plane and supplies. Steve agrees, but refuses to let Bucky go along. 70 minutes later, the trio is winging their way to France. Bucky explains to Cindy that Steve needs him to do the dirty little jobs his rep won't allow. In a private moment, Steve confides in Cindy that he's still unsure of himself. Bucky interrupts another potentially romantic moment when they near the drop point. No sooner do they land, they are greeted by French resistance fighters. Cindy smooths things over, and the resistant leader warns them over increased Nazi activity due to a very important prisoner they have taken. Feeling this is Fletcher, Steve and company take off with the rebels.
Fletcher is being held in a posh Paris hotel where the killing squad awaits the arrival of the master interrogator. When he arrives, he displays a number of torture devices that make even the stoic Fletcher wince, especially the testicular perforator. Anyway, their French allies sneak Steve, Bucky, and Cindy into Paris on the River Seine, but they are spotted by German soldiers. Steve goes into action as cap, but an explosion results, catching the attention of the killing squad and the master interrogator. As Cap and the others make their way through the sewer toward the hotel, the interrogator injects Fletcher with a truth drug of his own design. Fletcher tries to fight the drug by thinking of what would happen if the Nazis get the Vitaray secret. He sees an army of Nazi super soldiers and himself as an accomplice of Adolf Hitler. Cap makes his way out of the sewer and onto the street. Despite Cap's orders, Bucky follows and creates a diversion by setting an explosion on a truck. As the truck explodes, Fletcher uses the distraction to break free, and rather than reveal secrets, throws himself out the window several stories up. A stunned Cap races over and cradles his lifeless body.
Out for revenge, Cap enters the hotel as the killing squad waits for him. In the battle, Sar Sprite's tank explodes, engulfing him in his own toxins and killing him. After a long battle, Cap eventually defeats Blitzkrieg and Zahn Mortar, but realizes the folly of blindly going after them. As if in answer, he is surrounded by the master interrogator and a cadre of Nazi soldiers.
Meanwhile, Cindy leads Bucky to a French resistance safe house. As they enter, a Nazi officer answers the door. Bucky blurts out that it's a Nazi trap, but he has no idea. He is soon held at gunpoint by Cindy.
Cap escapes the soldiers and ends up at the Eiffel Tower with Blitzkrieg and Zahn Mortar in hot pursuit. As they climb the tower, Cap kicks Blitzkrieg over, his active electrical harpoon making contact with the tower, electrocuting him. His battle with Zahn Mortar is brutal, and the two men go over the edge of the tower, with Cap holding on to the platform and his foe dangling from his foot. Cap looks up to see the red skull standing above him. The skull points his Luger and fires. To be concluded. We failed to mention last time that a good chunk of this series is inspired by the adventure movie serials of the 30s and 40s. You know, that what has gone before we read is an indicator that there is a definite, you know, just the text that's, a you know, that's on the back of the cover and things like that. The names of the titles of each issue, I mean, they feel like a movie serial.
Mm-hmm.
And Cap actually had a movie serial in the 40s, but it was pretty much Cap in costume only. He didn't have a shield, he didn't have Bucky, and he wasn't even Steve Rogers. So it's like, what was the point?
Yeah. No.
So it makes Red Brown again look downright, you know, authentic and, you know, true to the comic. You know, the opening, like we said last time, I had issues 1 and 2, and I got 3 and 4 through the mail recently, basically, to do this,
mm-hmm.
and because I wanted to read it. But issue number 3, the beginning of it, the storytelling kind of suffers a little bit, because I'm not really sure what Sour Sprites did at first. I had to look at it about 4 times to figure out. He basically shot his toxic gas through both sides of the phone booth and missed Fletcher, but he could have hit him if he wanted to. Is basically what it amounted to.
Mm.
So it was kind of like, because we were like a hole behind him and a hole in front of him, but it was just kind of hard to tell. So, but whatever. What the killing squad did to the diner patrons is, ugh, yeah. It's pretty chilling. I mean, you don't see a lot of detail, but you see just a bunch of bodies lumped over each other. And there's this one woman that's still alive, and you
just
know,
bloody messages. And
yeah, scrawl all over the wall. It's done tastefully, but it's still disturbing, and because you don't see that much, it's even more disturbing, because you're really not exactly sure what they did. Again,
right.
Show a little restraint there, comic creators of nowadays. You know, so Cap, you know, races to save Cindy. He comes through the wall, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then McGuire gets to draw sexy 40 stockings on the disheveled Cindy. As Shag would say, she's hot.
You're a pig.
Oink, oink. You know, again, you know, McGuire, he handles the emotions on the face of Cindy very well, especially considering later that we find out that they're not sincere emotions.
Right.
But, which we'll get to that in just a little bit. But yeah, he handles that really, really well. I mean, you can just hear her sobbing, you know, as she's talking to him, just because of the look on her face. Of course, Bucky walks in on Cap, and Cap changing back into Steve. That goes all the way back to Cap number one. But you know, and I always remember the dialogue from the Tales of Suspense number 63, when you know they cover that in the Marvel Superheroes cartoons. Like I said last time, it adapted that story, like, you know, adapting it's not even really what it is.
No.
It pretty much just copies it and puts some audio to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bucky's like, you know, oh, you're Cap. And Steve's like, well, what am I going to do with you now? Well, the only thing you can do is make me your partner. It's like, well, no, he could kill you.
So
he could call up the government, you know, guys, I got found out here, so we'll take care of it. You know, and nobody ever sees Bucky again. Bucky's in a footlocker at the bottom of the Hudson. Yeah, it's like...
he finds out what Roswell's really for.
There you go. But this makes a lot more sense because, you know, Bucky, you know, quickly says, I can get you there and I can do this. And, you know, and again, this
works... Because he's a little shady boy.
This works into, like they said in the intro, he's a little con man. And this works into Bucky being the shady partner of the two. This is where that portrayal begins, as we said last time, too. And of course, it's picked up on and expanded upon by Ed Brubaker and people like that said Bucky did the really dirty stuff, like snipering and all that type of stuff.
Right.
Which ties into the Winter Soldier later. Steve and Cindy never quite get that moment.
No.
They almost do several times, just like Steve and Peggy in the first Avenger film. But, you know, last time we were making a lot of comparisons to the first Avenger. These issues, not so much of an influence, which I think is interesting, especially considering that I didn't read these two till just now. It's almost like the other guys didn't either, especially the turn that Cindy's character takes.
Ugh.
This is where her and Peggy diverge completely.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about the Master Interrogator's other torture devices? They include the auditory canal drilling bore. Khan would probably like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The digitary cutaneous extractor.
Basically to chop off fingers.
Yeah. And the intramandibular plaque grinder.
To yank your teeth out.
your teeth and the plaque along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Testicular perforator. Let's say that again.
God.
All I have to say is you don't want that ever in your future.
I'm good thing I wasn't reading that part of it because I would have been like, it's obvious to me that my... So, as you noticed when we mentioned the credits, there's another artist involved in this issue. Kevin McGuire. I have not... Now, this is one thing I probably should have done some notes on. I didn't. There's a Modern Masters book on Kevin McGuire that I'd like to get from Tomorrow's, but whatever the reason, Kevin McGuire did not finish illustrating this series. He's got, you know, he does about half or three-fourths of this issue, and then next issue, he does the cover, and I'm guessing it's still considered some storyteller, so I'm guessing he still contributed to the story. Perhaps he did some layouts, but I'm thinking he didn't because... The layouts aren't as strong.
It doesn't flow.
It just, yeah. The layouts aren't as strong. You know, Kevin West steps in. He is a very new artist at this point. He only had three comics to his name before this issue. But he later had a lengthy run on the 90s Guardians of the Galaxy series. But I really feel like, one, they should have just let McGuire finish it. I mean, I know they were, you know, trying to get it out in Cap's 50th anniversary. But... they either should have let McGuire finish it or got another famous artist.
A more seasoned
artist to finish it up, because it really does suffer. And he's doing his best. He's even trying to ape McGuire's style. And he does a decent job.
I wonder why they tapped him to finish.
He's probably standing around when they were in a bind. I don't know. And this is nothing against the guy. He was put in an impossible situation. I mean, no young artist. He actually did well considering he only had 3 credits before this. But this was a big deal. This was Marvel's. They put out, there was a 50th anniversary issue of Captain America, and then there was this, but this was the big celebration thing. Mm-hmm. And, it kind of stinks that they, I don't know why McGuire didn't get it finished. He might have had a good reason, but it, 25 years later, it just stinks that he didn't get to finish it. Well, thank goodness that McGuire does draw the scene where Fletcher chooses suicide over betraying his country.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a very powerful, very, powerful. Very mm-hmm. shocking. I mean, you didn't see that coming, So, which that everybody in every podcast is saying that now. That's become, the go-to, Quicksilver's lines from Avengers, Age of Ultron. So, but yeah, and McGuire also draws most of the brutal fight with the Killing Squad. Clearly Cap's just honked off. He's going in for revenge. And then he realizes, I really shouldn't have done this. One thing that West really kind of lets down when he comes in is, Cap says the streets are swarming with Nazi soldiers. That he shows 2. There's a silhouette of 2. It's all they had to do was throw a rock and let the 2 guys look the other way and they could run across the street.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that's another case where, a seasoned artist would have made a crowd scene and made you believe there were a bunch of people out there. And it's really unfortunate that he doesn't draw the WTF moment of the entire series where Cindy betrays Bucky and reveals her true colors. Part of that is, it really stinks because McGuire had such a clearly defined version of Cindy, it would have played that much better.
Mm-hmm.
As it stands, West Cindy doesn't quite look like McGuire's, and it almost, because it is so out of nowhere and shocking, you're like, is this for real? When you're reading it. To me, that's mm-hmm. the way I felt. I was like, maybe did the art change bother you that much?
Oh, something like that. You always pick up on it and notice it. But by the same token, I was drawn into the story so much that I was just like, I looked over that, mm-hmm.
So what did you think of that reveal?
Well, I was sitting here at the table reading it, and I was just like, what? What? What?
And I said, I know what part you just got to. I think partially, too, because...
I think the reason was because I was set up by Peggy Carter to think she would be like Peggy Carter. And she, she's a traitor? What?
Yeah, you think she's an analog for Peggy Carter because she is,
in a lot of ways. If there was going to be... I was thinking, okay, there's going to be a surprise traitor in this series. I just felt that going into
right.
it that there was. I honestly thought it was going to be Fletcher. I thought that Fletcher was going to be the traitor, the one that was in there. I really thought it was going
to
be him.
Like he'd been compromised and had to .
Well, I thought because, it was going to be, I fought for my country and I did this and this and this and then I got nothing out of it. And then, I thought it was going to be him.
Mm, okay.
And I thought when they got there to rescue him, they're like, ha ha, it was a setup, da 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 da. And then it was her. And I was like, what? Because of the Peggy Carter thing, I thought, they'll not do that with her. I didn't even consider it,
right?
And I thought for sure it was going to be Fletcher. That's who I was thinking of.
Well, one thing that we kind of failed to really, and that's my fault, get across last time is Agent X. We didn't really describe what Agent X looked like. Agent X was, hooded and masked and
dressed in a Ku Klux Klan outfit.
Basically with a swastika on, which we don't want to get into that just yet because we're not into issue number 4 yet. Because there's some further information. We're going to get to it here in a little bit. It's not that big of a spoiler, but we'll get into that when we get to that part. But Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about it. On one hand, I'm like, that was really good. I mean, I didn't see Quicksilver. I didn't see that coming, you know. I mean, I didn't. I mean, that was a shocker, you know. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, oh, man, you know.
I know.
But I think it's because of, it's all Haley Atwell's fault.
Yeah.
She's so damn good. Just
I love her.
I do, too.
Hey, can't blame you.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting because the whole, in Agent Carter, the series, they thought she was a traitor. And
well, true,
know,
true.
Yeah, you know, yeah. So getting beyond that. So Cap, you know, makes his way to the Eiffel Tower. Of course he does, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And Blitzkrieg and Zahn Mortar are after him. But he kicks Blitzkrieg over, and even though he's apparently insulated in rubber all up from head to toe, it electrocutes him but doesn't electrocute Cap and Zahn Mortar. I mean, wouldn't that whole thing be electrified and...
One would think.
And fry them? I mean, that's just kind of, you know, that's... I'm applying logic lad to that versus you're falling down a job.
Hell yeah.
You were just too dumbfounded by the Cindy thing. You know, I thought all Cindys were good and pure and sweet and nice and stuff.
Honey, we've been together for almost a quarter of a century.
Oh. So Cap finally faces the Red Skull and then cliffhanger. Ugh, you know, but we'll get to it here in a little bit. This issue, it should have been a home run, but McGuire dropping out, it really hurt it. I mean, it's nothing against West, but his acting just isn't what McGuire's is. You know, like we said, the non-crowded streets. And I really, if he was following his layouts, then I'm thinking that McGuire just threw some thumbnails out super quick.
I think it was phoned in.
Yeah.
What he did contribute was phoned in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, his pencils are great, but it's like, and there's, you know, he'll illustrate, like, there's no page numbers in this. Of course there's not. But, you know, he illustrates, you know, basically till they get to France. And then you start to see West come in. And, you know, then there's a couple pages of West and then a couple pages of McGuire but before the end, you know, the last page with McGuire is when he's fighting in the first couple pages of his battle after Fletcher's killed with the killing squad when Sarsprites dies. And I mean, there's actually some back and forth, you know, page to page stuff going on, but I mean, it's not bad by any means, but just when you the first two issues were just looked so awesome, it just, you know, it's you can't help but be a letdown, especially after waiting to read it for 25 years.
Well, I mean, it's just like, you know, you were given the gold, but then guess what? Here's the bronze.
Right. So we'll take a break on that, and we'll come back. We'll discuss the conclusion, issue number 4.
Trekker Talk, a fan podcast devoted to the adventures of 23rd century bounty hunter Mercy St. Clair from the pages of Trekker Comics by creator, writer, and artist Ron Randall. I'm Darren.
And I'm Ruth. We'll be discussing the stories, characters, and art in this excellent retro sci-fi adventure series, as well as having side conversations about other areas of fandom.
We hope you'll join us as we travel from the dangerous back streets of New Gallif to the depths of outer space and everywhere in between.
Trekker Talk is available at podbean.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
So we're back to discuss the final issue of The Adventures of Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty, number 4, even though I wrote down number 3 like a dope. So this is issue number
4. I know,
4.
I was like, what? What?
Yeah.
I know, we just talked about that.
Yeah. The date on this one is January 1992. It went on sale October 22nd, 1991. Which, see, I mean, they had 2 more months to get that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so why didn't they give McGuire 2 extra months to finish this thing?
Or at least a month.
Yeah. I mean, if it came out in December of 1991, it would have still been fine. Anyway. But the cover is by McGuire, who draws large figures of Cap and Bucky in their classic costumes. Cap has a circular shield, and he's got the, you know, his cowl goes all the way down to his neck and everything. And Bucky's in his, you know, usual shirt with the flap and all that. The vignettes are Showdown, Cap face to face with the Red Skull, Breakout, Cap and prisoners break out of a Nazi stronghold, and Defeat, a captured Steve in prison with Adolf Hitler observing. Book 4 of 4, Angels of Death, Angels of Hope. Fabian Nicieza and Kevin McGuire, storytellers. Steve Carr and Kevin West, pencils. That's different. Terry Austin, inks. Richard Starkings, letters. Paul Mounts, colors. Joe Kaufman, logo and book design. Mike Rockowitz, editor. Barry Dutter, assistant editor. Tom DeFalco, editor-in-chief. Special thanks again to Mark Gruenwald.
The Red Skull shoots Zahn Mortar, calling him a failure. He pulls Cap up, and our hero is then apprehended by the Nazi soldiers. At the tower base, Cap is reunited with equally captured Bucky and Cindy. The Skull monologues about the superiority of the Third Reich, and Cap tells him they'll never crush the American spirit. The Skull calls for Agent X, and Cindy steps forward. A broken Cap and Bucky are flown to Berlin as prisoners.
While Cap remains despondent, Bucky takes in his surroundings, including a concentration camp and all its horrors. Bucky and Steve are hosed down, dressed in prison stripes, and taken to their cells, while an arena is prepared. Bucky knows Cap is reeling from the death of Fletcher and Cindy's betrayal. As he ponders their fate, Steve has a visitor, their Führer himself, Adolf Hitler. Hitler orders Cap's uniform be mended and for him to wear it. He cannot have him crushed before his time.
Bucky tries to give Steve a pep talk, and soon the guards demand Steve put on his Captain America uniform. They take him from the prison, and Bucky uses a lifted paperclip to pick his cell lock. On his way out, he finds Cindy in full Nazi regalia and belts her one. Cindy reveals she was on her way to free Bucky. Despite being a child of the fatherland, she knows Steve is a good man and she feels she must help him. She gives Bucky the master keys and tells him of a storage depot 3 barracks down.
Cap finds himself in the arena, surrounded by German soldiers. The event broadcasts throughout Germany. He is to face an armored Red Skull in mortal combat. Bucky disguises himself as a German officer and begins freeing the prisoners.
In the arena, Cap is given back his shield while several medieval weapons are placed throughout the arena. The Red Skull strikes first and Cap is slowly forced to snap out of his depression. If I die today, even if I die at your hands, I'll go down fighting.
Very good. Bucky arms the freed prisoners and finds a Panzer tank and a gallon of red paint. In the arena, Cap defeats his foe but refuses to kill him. He tells all that listen that he represents a country that is not about killing and destroying. If they choose to kill him, then he will die a fighting American. Just then, a Panzer tank emblazoned with Die Nazi Scum bursts through the arena wall with Bucky at the controls and his army of prisoners behind him. Hitler orders Cap shot and killed, but the quick-thinking Cap picks up the Skull's circular shield, deflects the machine gun fire, and then throws it, disarming the gunman and knocking Hitler down. But the Skull has recovered and aims a machine gun at the hero. Cindy throws Cap his shield, and an angry Skull turns his fire on his former protege.
Cap wants to run to her already lifeless body, but Bucky begs him to get on the tank so they can get the prisoners to freedom. Cap does so with the Red Skull in pursuit. As the tank nears the airfield in freedom, Bucky blasts the Skull's jeep, but the madman leaps to the tank and he and Cap tussle once more. Cap kicks the Skull off and he and Bucky and the prisoners board the waiting plane. Having failed, the Red Skull raises his pistol to his head, but decides to live with his failure. He vows to destroy his accursed enemy. There will always be a tomorrow, Captain America, and the fires of my hatred will burn for a million tomorrows to come.
With the pilot at gunpoint, the heroes head toward London, but Cap doesn't feel victorious. He can't comprehend how Cindy could betray them, betray him. He has lost her, and he never told her that he loved her. But Bucky reminds him that she died helping them and saved his life. She loved him too.
The hero's return is shown on a newsreel, which Steve's friend, Elliot, and Patty watch in a crowded theater. As the film rolls, Cap is greeted by a throng of press and a smiling FDR. Even Elliot claps. The final reel shows Cap in his improved costume with his new circular shield, along with his new fighting partner, the Masked Bucky. Heroes for a nation, heroes for a world, heroes forevermore. couldn't help it, could you?
No, couldn't. It's not like it's not going to be in this episode, but you know, I really like the cover to this one. Bucky's standing triumphant with his chest out and a smirk on his face, you know, a McGuire smirk on his face. And you can actually argue he's more of a hero in this one than Cap.
Yeah, I mean.
Which we'll get to. Unfortunately, like we said, this is the only place you see McGuire's art in this issue. He may have done the layouts, but I'm not thinking he did because it doesn't look like his stuff. And West and Carr interchange pages throughout.
This bothered me.
Did it?
This bothered me because you could tell, you know, West was trying to ape McGuire. Carr didn't do that.
Right.
And I mean, it was more distinctively different.
Yeah, and we'll get into that as we go along. But I think I actually prefer Carr. Carr actually had done quite a bit of work for Marvel's Savage Sword of Conan and other related Conan and fantasy titles. So he actually had some time in the industry. I think his stuff's stronger than West's, even though he doesn't try to ape McGuire. There's one particular part where I wish he had tried to ape McGuire more, but other than that, I'd rather have somebody do their own thing than be McGuire light, you know? Mm. That's how I feel about it. After this, he did a lot of journeyman work, and then he seemed to disappear from comics around 1994. One thing about West, his Red Skull, it's kind of the direction that McGuire was going. We didn't see a whole lot of his skull, but he, you know, again, like I said last time, he doesn't really look like he's got a skull mask on. He looks like an ugly guy with a sunburn. Carr's Red Skull is more accurate to the skull comic look of the time. He's got the sunken in, nose and everything. Where Carr's artwork really lets you down is Cindy looks even less like McGuire's design.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
It takes away from, again, her, not only is she a Nazi, she's Agent X, you know, which is what I almost slipped up when we talked about the last one, although, you know, you're going to listen to this, so it doesn't matter. But she doesn't look like the character we knew from the first three issues, and she looks like a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah, she does. She looks a lot younger.
Yeah,
you know.
She looks thinner. You know, mm-hmm. McGuire drew her, you know, like
buxom.
Yeah, and she was, you know, she wasn't, you know, most women back then, you know, like Haley Atwell, they're not super.
Sticks.
They're not sticks, and he draws her very skinny looking. So, you know, because Cindy is revealed to be Agent X, that means that all the torture that Fletcher was hearing was put on because Agent X was standing in front of him.
Right.
You know, I mean, she was, I don't know if it was a recording they had.
They had another woman
and was torturing her. So, yeah, I mean, they're Nazis. So, you know, who knows what they were doing. Then actually going way back to the first two issues in our previous episode, you know, when you said that about, you know, Cindy wasn't a strong character like Peggy because, you know, she, you know, seemed squeamish at death and everything. I think part of that, you know, that worked both ways. Before we knew the reveal of her being a Nazi and Agent X, it worked that, you know, she couldn't believe that somebody could do this. And, you know, she was disgusted by it and saddened. But now it's like because of who she is and eventually how she ends up helping Cap, you get that she regrets. There's part of her that regrets such grisly things.
Right.
You know? So it kind of works both ways. I mean, it all fits. I mean, that part's really well done. I mean, because if you go back and read the other issues, there's nothing that jumps out like, you know, that it's kind of like The Sixth Sense, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
There's nothing that, which, you know, we won't spoil The Sixth Sense, but if you haven't seen it by now, you know, the movie's like 20 years old, but.
If you haven't seen it by now, Bruce Willis is dead the whole time. There.
Somebody's like, no!
That's the whole point. That's the whole point of the movie.
If you haven't
watched it, it's your fault. Sorry.
I can't believe Darth Vader is Luke's dad. Oh, man. But, you know, like I said, overall, you know, I do like that Carr's work is more professional You know, it just seems better conceived than West's on whole. Although, you know, barring the look of Cindy, which doesn't work, you know, Bucky, of course, you know, to bring it down to a serious note, he witnesses firsthand the horrors of the concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people, you know, Bucky's like, the rumors are true, which a lot of people didn't believe even after the war. For years, didn't believe that these things happened, you know, which is, it's hard to imagine, but I mean, it was like, I don't know if they didn't want to believe it or they just didn't, but.
Well, and he started, I mean, you have to say this about Bucky when he's going through, he's like, oh my gosh. Okay. I know that this is what I'm looking at, but I've got to snap out of it. I've got to say, okay, what's the layout? Here's here's where that's at. I got to focus on this.
Well, that's my big problem with this issue. I know this is Captain America year one. I mean, he's green. He's not quite there yet, but
I wish it was Captain America instead of Bucky, but maybe they did it so Bucky would have something to do and show his value.
I think it was twofold. I think they were trying to show a less than perfect Captain America, to show the human side of Captain America. And I think they were trying to boost Bucky and in a, you know, modern sense, because, you know, Bucky had long been dead ever since Cap had been revived. There were flashback tales that showed him. But other than the Invader series that was set in the 40s, in the modern Marvel age since the 60s, there hadn't been, you know, a lot of new Bucky material other than issues here and there.
Right.
So, you know, and this was in the postmodern comics era. This was post Dark Knight Returns, post Watchmen, post Batman Year One. And so they could examine, well, you know, what can we do to make Bucky work? You know, really work. What's Bucky's value? And, you know, and you can argue that, well, you know, Steve, you know, somebody, a psychologist could look at this and they'd say, well, a woman betrayed Steve, but his teenage boyfriend, you know, helped him. I didn't mean to say boyfriend, but teenage.
You got
to
take that out. just start over.
Well, that his male teenage friend, he could count on him, you mm-hmm. know, like it's some anti, you know, feminine thing, some, you know, thing. But, you know, I mean, I don't think that's what Nicesio meant. I think he meant, you know, I think exactly what we said. But I understand showing Cap has feet of clay to a point, but it just goes on too long. You know, mm-hmm. he's just depressed and with his head hanging down too long in this story. I mean,
he's Captain frickin' America.
Right. I mean, and I think, again, I think we're spoiled this time by Chris Evans.
Yes.
Because, he has that one moment after Bucky dies
mm-hmm.
in First Avenger where he's in the blitzed bar that they used to go to. And Peggy walks in and he's like, I can't even get drunk, you know. And he's depressed and she gives him a pep talk and he gets his ass back in gear, you know.
Right.
And, I mean, I like that. I prefer that. You know, I'm not saying Cap can't have a moment of, you know, of depression, but, you know, in Nicesio's defense, in the modern Marvel comics, Cap was sometimes kind of whiny. You know, I mean, he used to, I'm a man at a time, and, you know, under Stan Lee, he'd get into whiny fits of depression. And you know, he'd wake up thinking about Bucky and see Rick Jones and think Rick Jones was Bucky. And, you know, and then, you know, he quit being Captain America, you know, after the whole, it was basically during the Watergate era. Oh. And we became Nomad and the first time. And, you know, and we first quit being Captain America. He was only Nomad once, but, you know, and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's not without its precedent, but it's still kind of disappointing, you know, because at this point, you know, I mean, he's there, you know, it just drags out too long. It's like until the Red Skull starts really knocking him around, he doesn't snap out of it. And Bucky gets to be more heroic in this last issue than Cap does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, other than, You know, Bucky saves the prisoners. Bucky arms the prisoners. He comes in and blows up a Nazi arena and sends Hitler packing.
Mm-hmm.
And all Steve does is knock the Red Skull around and say, I ain't going to kill him. I mean, yeah. You know, really. I mean, yeah, I hate to say it, but yeah, it just drags out too long for me. It was kind of disappointing. You know, I was just kind of waiting. You know, I was kind of just hoping, you know, if the Red Skull come out and started monologuing, Cap just punched him right in the face and said, shut up. You know, and like he did in the movie, you know, when he's on the catwalk, he's monologuing and he just walks up to him and punches him right in the face.
Well,
you know, it's like, but the skull looks a little goofy in the armor. It's a little over the top, but it's not hard to imagine that one, Hitler would, you know, in this scenario that Hitler wouldn't broadcast this because he was all about the propaganda.
I mean, truth be told, if you look at actual history and stuff like this, he wouldn't have done a live broadcast.
He would have recorded it.
Yep, to make sure it went the way he wanted.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, and I'm being logic class on this.
No,
but
that's fine. That's what you're here for.
That's proven history. Hitler did do tests. Hitler did do different fight scenarios and stuff like that were recorded. And it's later been found that there is footage where things didn't go how he wanted. That was never shown to the people, to the Germany at large, or to, you know, it wasn't released as propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
He kept stuff that didn't look good away. But Hitler would not have done this live.
Yeah, you're probably right. But, you know, then Cap wouldn't have got to say his speech live either, so...
I know, yeah. But the whole point of it, though, is there is historical truth, accuracy, context for this, that Hitler would not have recorded something live that could have potentially not gone his way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do know that, you know, I've seen painted portraits where Hitler is painted in medieval armor,
mm-hmm.
astride a horse, so the Red Skull's kind of over-the-top armor kind of makes sense, so... You know, that part, at first I'm like, well, that's kind of goofy looking. He looks like Skeletor. You know, he looks like special, you know, special battle damage Skeletor. You know, hit his chest and it flicks over to where there's a, you know, big scratch across it. Wes does his best, but that fight scene between Cap and Skull really lacks that kinetic pow that the earlier issues had. I mean, the action sequences in the Maguire issues were just fantastic. And this is just, it's okay. I mean, it's not bad, but it's just not.
It's not splash page worthy.
No. Mm-mm. You know,
I mean, honestly, where Bucky belts Cindy is a better fight than
that was,
you know.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, it is.
That's
and
more
I mean,
impactful.
And that's another thing going back, you know, Bucky's like, I do the things that Cap can't do because of his rep. Captain America would never have hit a woman.
Right.
Bucky saw it as necessary, so he did it.
I would have punched her, too.
I mean, after that. You know. But I'm saying,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Cap refusing to murder the skull in his speech, that's Captain America. That's a pure Cap moment. May probably been better off if he just went ahead and killed him. But you know, to me, that we finally see the classic unflappable Cap emerge.
But by the same token, I'm sorry, but...
You're fine.
Going from, you know, the first Avenger, from the way Captain America is portrayed by Chris Evans, he would have killed him. He would have taken the opportunity to take him out. Because
well,
Captain America is a soldier.
Right.
Captain America is not idealistic Batman. I mean, he is, but at the same time, he's a soldier who
right.
follows orders, who knows that as a military man, sometimes death is what's going to happen to your enemy.
Right.
And that's the objective.
Right.
To me, that doesn't fit.
Mm.
That, to me, does not fit.
Okay.
I don't like it.
Well,
I'm sorry. I disagree with you.
Well, that's okay. But I see where you're pointing. And honestly, you know, I'll rephrase that. This fits in with the Captain America of the time. Through the 60s up through the like early 2000s, or at least the 90s, before it was revisited upon that, you know, although we see Cap shoot people in this book, Mm-hmm. I mean, we see a couple times he has a gun and he shoots some German soldiers. But I think there's a difference between, even though it's in this, between gunning. I mean, there really isn't any difference. He's still killing people.
Uh-huh.
But the notion is, they're firing at him. He's got the skull defeated, so he's not just going to execute him. That's what I was trying to get at. I think that's, if you go back and look at the 40s stories, especially the covers more so than the stories, I mean, they showed Cap and Bucky jumping in, the Alex Schomburg covers. They'd show Cap and Bucky and Namor and Submariner. Namor is a Submariner. It's Namor and the Human Torch coming in with bombs and machine guns and just shooting the place up, And obviously they killed some people, So I think, because the Marvel comics, the timely comics of the 40s, they were so entrenched in World War II. I think when people have, in modern times, because of the slacking of the comics code and then the eventual just disappearance of it, they've come to say, they had to kill people back then.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just kind of, they're okay with it. But at this time, I think they were trying to reflect that this is the Captain America that's, in his book right now. This is the Captain America that's in the Avengers. He doesn't kill people. I don't think they ever quite come out and said Cap never killed anybody, but he didn't go around killing people, in his comic of the time. And I think that's what they were trying to get at here. But I agree. He'd been a lot better off if he just went ahead and plus he's a war criminal, obviously.
Well, I mean,
but I said that about Timely in the 40s, to get off on a tangent, because they were so entrenched in World War II, after the war, they really struggled with, what do we do with these characters? They didn't build the rogues gallery that especially...
Post-war universe.
Right. Well, Batman, and DC was smarter and didn't have as many stories that actually involved wartime themes. They had plenty of covers, but, they just chose not to just concentrate just on that. And so you had the eventual building of Batman's Rogues Gallery over the 40s. And once the war was over, they just went on with, what they had. But, Marvel, Timely, was like, well, crap, what do we do now? Basically. I digress. But, I get your point. But it's funny because Cap says he'll die a fighting American. Well, that might have been a little nod and a wink, because the fighting American was a character that Simon and Kirby, who, of course, created Cap, created in the 50s, that was an update semi-spoof on their own Captain America. And this was while Cap was in publishing limbo in the 50s. They revived Cap very briefly. Cap, Namor, and almost said Namor and Submariner again. Dang. Cap, Namor, and Torch briefly in the 50s. And then later that was explained that was the one of the other Captain Americas, because the real Cap was in the ice, and mm-hmm. he was the one that was Nutso, ended up being Nutso. But they published, Simon and Kirby published that through Prize Comics, and then at one point DC published a revival of it, and then another point I think Rob Liefeld published a version of it after he was kicked off the Heroes, Heroes? Yeah, Heroes Reborn Captain America series. Really. That's the one where Captain America's got giant man boobs. You've never seen that picture online?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then somebody redrew it with him naked, just showing how ridiculous it looked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing, and it seems like we're griping a lot, but one thing I'm really not keen on is Cap picks up the Skull's shield, which is round, and he uses it as his classic shield, like a frisbee, throws it, knocks the gun out of the hand. It's got a big swastika on it. I don't like Captain America's first use of a shield like that, being with a big freaking swastika on it. It bothered me. If it just had an eagle on it or something, it wouldn't have bothered me nearly as bad. But it just, I don't know.
Well, but on the other hand, you're talking about a symbol of oppression, and he's using it for freedom.
Well,
so he's kinda, there's also that argument to be made. I understand your point.
Yeah.
But there's also the other side of the coin.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that, but, it just kind of... And as soon as I saw the Skull had a circular shield, I'm like, oh, I know what's going to happen.
Oh,
here.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that was telegraphed. I'm like, oh, yeah, Cap's getting a new shield.
Yeah, yeah. But It has nothing to do in here that Archie sued him or threatened to sue him over the shield. So, of course, Cindy throws Cap his shield, his triangular shield, and he deflects bullets from the Red Skull, and Red Skull just turns around and just fills her full of holes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no last moment between them. She's dead.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she drops dead, and she's gone. And, you know, there's no final moment of, I loved you, Steve. I had to help you. You know, it's like, she's gone.
Yeah.
She's dead.
And I'll be honest, I mean, as much as you're like, oh, what's their final moment going to be? At the same moment, that's what would have happened.
Right. I mean, it's more powerful that way.
You don't have time for the all final words, blah, 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 monologue, bull crap. You get your butt on the plane and get the job done, like, which is awful. But
you know,
still.
You think about tragic love stories. Think about Kirk and Edith Keeler. You know, she was hit by the truck, and he didn't come over and run over to her. She was dead, you know, and I mean, and he couldn't even look at her because of what he had to do, you know, and I mean, so that's a lot more powerful that way, because when you do that, you just stretch credibility, and it's just so, you know, I don't know, it's just too fake. I don't know, it just doesn't read true, you know, and it's more haunting that they didn't get that moment, that he didn't get to say, you know. You know, despite what you did, I still care for you. And then she says, I love you, and all that. So, yeah. I'm not really understanding how the prisoners got on the plane, because I'm assuming they ran ahead of the tank. I mean...
But, like, you know, they're concentration camp prisoners. I don't see how... I mean, to me, that doesn't make sense. Like you said, you know, West and crowd scenes aren't working, you know, unless that airfield was like 50 yards away. I don't see how that happened.
Right. Yeah. I don't see. Yeah. They couldn't fit in the tank. And I think.
But then again, I mean, if it was a concentration camp and they said they had barracks, maybe there was an airfield right in the immediate vicinity.
Well, if they just shown them getting on like a personnel truck or something.
Right. Right. And that would have worked.
That would have worked. Just running ahead of the tank. And, you know, Bucky turns around and shoots. You know, he shoots the Skull's Jeep or whatever he's in, and then, of course, he leaps to it. So, and, of course, the Skull almost kills himself, but then decides...
Of course, we need him for more stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He looks at himself in the mirror and says, you are failing!
Jeez.
Oh, yeah. So, at the end, we finally get the classic costumes of both Cap and Bucky on the last page. And it's not a bad shot, but it's a little stiff. I thought at least McGuire could have come in and drew that.
Right.
But no, he didn't. You know, this isn't a bad wrap-up, but you can't help but feel it would have been...
More.
It'd been epic had McGuire not bailed on it. I mean, again, I don't know his reasons why. He might have had legitimate reasons. You know, West and Carr do decent work. I mean, it. You know, if this was a regular Captain America comic, it'd been fine.
Right, but
this is the big to do. You know, it's a prestige format miniseries. Back then, it cost $4.95, which a regular comic book costs nowadays. But you know, it was square bound with the nice hard cardstock cover, and like we said, the first issue was embossed. But it feels like a fill in. It's a fill in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fill in on a big epic miniseries. I mean, imagine. I mean, I know this isn't as important as. You know, because it's not as important as Marvel's or Kingdom Come or something like that. But they were not too far after this.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, you know, Alex Ross paints the first 3.5 issues of Marvel's, and then some other guy comes in and
finishes it up,
or you know, the same thing on Kingdom Come. I mean, it's, you know, and maybe if McGuire had stayed with it, I think that's one reason why I think this comic lost steam. Because of that, and maybe it lost traction with its future credibility,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of that, because it's kind of an unfinished symphony, you know, it's like, you know, some, you know, it's like, I'm not saying McGuire's Beethoven, but it's like somebody found, you know, Beethoven's unfinished symphony and
you have some high school student
finish it up on a Casio keyboard, mm-hmm. you know, so it's, and nothing against those guys, but they were set up to fail. I mean, there's no way that they're going to. Unless they just got, you know, like they said, Alan Davis come in or George Perez, you come in and finish it. You know, it's like, oops, I'd rather have George Perez to begin with, you know, I mean, or something, you know, it's so, you know, it's just a shame. The first 3.5 issues are really great, but then this last one just seems undercooked. be interesting to see now if they took this and did a director's cut of it and let Maguire finish the pages he didn't do. And just, you know,
that last issue.
Do that last issue and the parts of issue 3 that he didn't do. And then collect it. Because, you know, if Neil Adams can redraw his pages in the, you know, Neil Adams, Batman illustrated by Neil Adams, that he has no business redrawing because it looks it looked 100 times better 40 years ago, what he's redrawing now, then, you know, then why can't Kevin Maguire come in and, you know, finish up?
Is he still working in comics?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's still around. So, yeah, he could do it, you know. So it's not like... I mean, he was a very young guy when he started.
I didn't know.
So, but you know, like we said, this obviously, especially the first two issues, did have an influence on Captain America: The First Avenger. And I recommend this series. I think if you're a fan of Captain America, you'll really enjoy it. If you read it, if you know going in that, and I had heard that Maguire didn't finish it. I don't know where I read that, but I kind of knew he didn't completely finish it. I didn't realize he completely bailed on issue 4 as far as the artwork. So I was kind of surprised by that. But I kind of knew going in, but if you've listened to this, we've warned you, you know.
Right.
I think with you knowing that you'll, you know, that you'll still enjoy it. And, I mean, it's a very good read, again.
And honestly, Chris picked up the last two issues for just a little over $5 with shipping.
Both of them, yeah. I mean, I just didn't see it, but I think if you go to a comic convention, if you got a comic shop, Professor Allen, have you ever seen this in a quarter bin? I don't know. But if you see it, you'll probably find it fairly cheap, and it's definitely worth it. And like I said, I don't think they've collected it. And I think part of the reason is because it was unfinished.
Uneven, yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, they trade it anyway. You know, they put it in a trade right away. But back then, Marvel was very slow on getting into making a lot of trade paperbacks. You know, they do it now, but DC had a much bigger trade paperback program than they did, especially at this. I mean, at this point, even DC wasn't doing a whole lot. But they got into it before Marvel did. But it is surprising that in all the push for the two Captain America movies, this hasn't come back out.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, I think that'll about wrap it up. You got any other comments on it?
No, I'm glad we talked about it. And then, you know, so.
We finally got to talk about Captain America.
So,
yes. So, and next time we'll try not to take so long. Speaking of next time, we got some things cooking. I don't really want to say what's going to be next. We're recording this a little ahead of schedule. So, I think
things aren't locked in yet as far as next topic. So, stay tuned, folks.
Yeah, so.
The best is yet to come.
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, we'll plead the fifth on that because we really don't know what it is. But we have some interesting things coming up. By the time this airs, it'll be toward the end of July. And that means it's only about a month before the return of a certain series within a series.
Mm-hmm.
That I think people enjoyed last year, and we want to do it again this year. So
the House of Frankenstein.
You ruined it. You blew it. Well, on that note, we'll let the new outro do all my ramblings for me, so I won't forget to mention email and leaving comments on the blog and. Facebook messages anymore because I usually do. And so, but please write us and leave comments because we'd love to hear what you think about this. If you, like we said before, if you've got comments on other shows, old shows, leave those. We'll talk about them. We don't care. And we'll read them on the air. And we've got a feedback show coming up before too long. So we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Supermates is a Franklin and Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises Worldwide. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied by either. Email can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at our blog at supermatescomic.blogspot.com. Please consider leaving a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast.